The title of the podcast is Injustice Anywhere is a Threat to Justice Everywhere. Why listen? Well, globally, our host, Robert Brzezinczak, PhD, ABD, MS, is a former public servant, professor, author, actor, and has consulted and trained law enforcement, corrections, and intelligence agencies. Guests who are experts in their respective fields will provide candid dialogue on relevant topics. Whatever affects one affects all indirectly. Again, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. These are not his words. They are the words of the great Martin Luther King Jr. But it all represents everything we will be talking about in this podcast. As much as he will be speaking more about cybersecurity, transnational organized crime, gang-related issues, there is a link between the quote and the topic. They all talk about preserving humanity, making the world a better place.
Hello, this is Injustice Anywhere is a Threat to Justice Anywhere. This episode is about the art of organized crime. I'm your host, Robert Brzezinczak, and we have a guest, Benjamin Manis of Benjamin Manis Associates, on this episode. So, Ben Manis is a nationally recognized subject matter expert in public safety, criminal justice reform, emergency management, and investigation. With 24 years of experience, he has served with both federal and municipal law enforcement agencies, contractors, and non-governmental organizations in assignments to include the New York Terrorist Trials Operations Command, Y2K Planning Operations, the DC Metropolitan Civil Disturbance Unit, the September 11, 2001 attacks, the DC Area Sniper Task Force, and Hurricanes Katrina, Rita, and Sandy. For nearly 9 years, Manis served as the Director of Office of Investigations for the American Board of Internal Medicine. In this role, he led global investigations, intellectual asset protection, and business continuity for North America's largest medical board, covering 250,000 physicians, certifying at over 5,000 locations worldwide, resulting in the resolution of over 150 cases and thousands of sanctions. Manis currently serves as a compliance officer and heads a consulting practice for a providing expert witness, operational risk management, security and emergency planning, and compliance assessment services for a diverse clientele. He is also a regular columnist for the Philadelphia Weekly, Broad and Liberty, Newsmax, and both Security Trade publications. Residing in Philadelphia, Manis has a master's degree in organizational leadership, bachelor's degree in criminal justice, both summa cum laude, and is a certified protection professional. So now we got that out of the way.
My eulogy.
I appreciate it, Ben. It's been some time, brother.
You read that kind of crap there and you realize how far we've come from, you know, a scout car beat. For the nation's worst police department in D.C.
Yeah, I remember. You were in Southeast. I was in Georgetown chasing squirrels, and you were chasing the bad guys.
Yeah, you had khaki patrols.
Yep.
Well, you know, I had three layers of pants that were all down beneath the buttocks line.
But it provided a foundation for us, and here we are.
Right. I mean, you know, people learn from adversity. People learn from the worst of things. You know, and that's the big giant difference from, you know, when people have the best of everything and they grow up in a privileged situation, or worse, when they're mere academics. You have a doctorate, I have a master's. And what people out there listening need to understand is you could be educated and be dumb. You need to be educated and experienced both. And I don't know about you, but I got my degree on the, you know, 25-year plan because I couldn't stop working. I went out and, you know, after my second year of undergrad at John Jay College in New York, jumped right onto the job, the first job they called, and started learning truth and backing it up with academia. So, you know, now we're paid has-beens who get to speak for a living.
Yep. Spoken well, because I'm a true academic through and through. I think I'll get my PhD once in this lifetime. It's an ongoing process. But
you already had the book. I don't know what you're waiting for. I tell you, that's my big fear is getting the published works done. And, you know,
well, as you know, fake it to make it.
Yeah,
But so let's jump in here. Good to catch up. Beautiful place we're in right now. Thank you for hosting this at your place. So I'm going to dive in here. Around the world, organized crime has become one of the main topics of conversation, especially in the news, amongst law enforcement officials, and throughout the halls of government institutions. How would you describe the current global landscape that has been paved by organized crime?
So to answer that question, you really got to drill down on what organized crime is. Most people who are hearing this, most people who watch TV, who binge a Martin Scorsese marathon, think of organized crime as the mafia, which was the first national introduction of what organized crime was because of the Valachi papers and because of the congressional hearings as we all saw in the 50s, when people started realizing that not all crime was just miscreants in the street, that there was some people bribing and building an enterprise out of it. And that was how the RICO legislation was created, and the racketeering laws were passed to basically make predicates so that, little crimes could be built into a pyramid if you could prove that they were committed, in the furtherance of a criminal enterprise. So that brings us to a textbook definition of what organized crime is. What we're seeing now is organized crime isn't just the mafia. Does the mafia still exist? Yeah, but much on a much smaller scale than it used to, and in a much more regionalized manner. So the mafia doesn't have, assertion control, and there are international criminal organizations. But the Italian mafia on this side of the ocean isn't as dominant as it was when all these great Scorsese movies and Coppola movies were getting written. But if you're looking at that type of organized crime, what you have to seriously concentrate on are things like Russia and some of the Asian Chinese, led markets. But another thing, to refresh you on what we did at Newman University when I lectured Joe Gassot's class and your class was, is corruption an organized crime enterprise? And over the last 5 years here in Philadelphia, public corruption has been prosecuted using RICO, and political machines in entrenched cities like Chicago, New Orleans, Philadelphia, Providence, Boston, New York to a certain extent, Baltimore, that is absolutely an organized crime operation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your big cases lately have shown that more so than these mafia indictments.
Yeah, and we're going to dive in a couple questions here about, what's going on with the state of organized crime, and I appreciate that definition. But what are the strategic, operational, and tactical assessments that government institutions can employ to counteract organized crime?
So you have to follow the money. Traditional investigations involved a lot of shoe leather. And, even on the federal level, a lot of the agencies are losing that shoe leather. So if you really want to tackle organized crime, whether it be political organized crime, whether it be criminal enterprises, whether it be a lot of the cyber crime organizations we're seeing even out of intellectual property theft houses like China, Russia, you want to follow the money. No one is doing this to build hospitals. What they're doing is they're taking illicit funds and making them real funds. So if you're watching money laundering and you're following the pathway for which money is illegal money is layered into legitimate enterprises or front enterprises and turned into legitimate paper that then becomes used by these criminal enterprises.
Okay.
That's what you have to watch. That's the big, big play right now. Isn't the little criminal activities, and I'm not saying they're little, do people still die? Yes. Does fentanyl still get in the country? Yes. None of these things are good.
Yeah.
But I want to dispel a big myth. And we've all seen The Wire, and we've all, I've worked corners like that. There's no one selling dope at Wisconsin and M. But
I've seen it on jump squads.
When you work Southeast, you see a lot of the corner boys. And what you realize getting away from the fiction and getting actually into putting down a drug organization is your most of your people up to the distribution level. Mm-hmm. So even in a corner gang. So let's say a guy has a crew chief. He's got five different guys working for him selling dope. Those guys make $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. Mm-hmm. They're not killing it. They're not, you know, they're not the guys, Freeway Rick Ross, where they have, safes built out of houses. The house is the safe and it's full of money. No, these are guys that are basically hustling all day. They're working a lot harder than someone waiting tables in a restaurant. They're making basically the same money, but they've been brought into this lifestyle and they don't know how to get out. So the question then you have to ask is, where do you get the big fish? That's where you get the big fish is whoever's cleaning the money. And the funny thing is pop culture is catching up with it. We've all seen Ozark.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. Ozark's great because it's showing that the real crime is happening after the crime takes place.
Right.
And I think if you're going to really catch criminal enterprises, following the money is the way to do it.
Okay. So, we had a sidewalk for, there was a police department or an agency for every sidewalk in D.C. So
ineffective as it should.
Yes. So speaking of that, that is a segue to the next question. How would you rate the interconnected partnership of governmental agencies in the pursuit of combating organized crime?
It's still poor. It's still poor. It depends on the level of the crime. Working on something right now I can't really get into detail on. And I'm helping them on the private sector with an SEC-led lawsuit, right? And that's SEC's regulatory, not criminal. But there's definitely criminal investigation taking place because they've interviewed all of us. That's a money investigation. So when you got a money investigation, you'll see a lot more coordination. You'll see the FBI working with the IRS. And I even got a chance to be interviewed by an agent of the FDIC.
Oh, wow.
And there's only 64 of them nationwide. So that's how you know that the agency is getting there. So when the more sophisticated the crime, the more coordination there is. And it really has to do with the federal prosecutor looking at it and going, let's get all the chefs in this kitchen because there's a lot of dollar signs into it. Here's the problem. Blue collar crime, the crime that people worry about. So let's look at the other side of that coin, organized crime. A street gang is an organized crime entity. Why? Because it's more than five people. Usually they're committing crimes for shared proceeds and they're basically running an enterprise.
Yep.
Street gangs are dropping bodies left, right, and center.
Yeah, we're in ground zero in Philadelphia and they had the highest homicide rate in the United States.
Yep. So Philly is the most dangerous big city in America. And you've brought up a very good example because Philly's attack at this in the last administration has been abysmal. So do these things happen in a vacuum? No. I think one of the best municipal agencies for combating any type of criminal activity on a grand scale, but definitely, when it looks at gangs, is the LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department. But even the Los Angeles Police Department's had their hat handed to them because their prosecutors have been hijacked and they're not taking a lot of the cases. So what does a police department do when they're dropping 6-7 digits in man hours on a gang investigation that the new politically elected prosecutor just doesn't want to take because of the optics?
Yeah.
And we're seeing that here in Philadelphia. We're seeing that in Chicago with Kim Fox. We're seeing that in Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby, definitely with Kim Gardner in St. Louis. So what the media will have you believe is that these murders and these horrific organized crime incidents have been on the rise because of COVID over the last year. Mm-hmm. No, that's not true. If you read my column in Broad and Liberty, statistics indicate that the correlation is less on COVID and more on the Ferguson effect, that political wave that elected prosecutors into those cities and mayors into those cities that were appointing people lax on criminal justice policies. Because during the same COVID pandemic, a lot of cities like Tampa, Jacksonville, certain Texas cities, the crime wasn't nearly as bad. And they had the same pandemic.
Yeah.
So where's the correlation? It's a lot of political back and forth. But, if you're not bringing the cases for whatever reason, for your belief in criminal justice or you're buying into certain ethoses and on systemic injustice, which have been dispelled by even Harvard at this point, you know, you're going to create an environment where your police department, no matter how mighty, is going to be playing catch up. And what you and I both know catch up is when you're running 25 runs on a run sheet, you're basically going, you're taking a report or you're making a quick arrest and getting back in service to catch the next job and doing nothing proactive. And the best, you know, if you're going to arrest an actual criminal enterprise, an organized crime enterprise, you have to do it with some man hours. You have to be able to put some surveillance in with the full expectation that you're not going to do anything for at least 2 months.
So we basically, as the front line, as police officers, are putting the finger in a dike. We're just plugging a hole. We're not really preventing anything. We're just after the fact.
I wouldn't even say putting a finger in a dike because the water is all around us at this point. It's, you know, to quote Apocalypse Now, you know, we're handing out speeding tickets at the Indy 500.
Yeah.
And that is the biggest problem. If you know, my hometown is New York City. And I had luckily gotten my start in the mid-90s in New York. So I had the privilege of watching the greatest turnaround in criminal justice history. New York going from one of the most dangerous cities in the country. Dinkins last year, there were 2,449 murders in 1 year.
Wow.
And that's just straight crime. That's not, there's no terrorism.
I remember the red light district and
that Times Square
cleaned up tremendously.
And then, you know, it was less than, you know, 350. And now New York has gone high. New York's gone back into the 400s for the first time in over a decade. The joke is New York has 40,000 law enforcement professionals. It's 35,000 NYPD alone. So they actually have the bodies to tackle this issue. Yeah. And they can't. Which is scary. That should be scaring anyone. And it has nothing to do with the capabilities of the NYPD. It has everything to do with the political pressure, the orders that they've been given by people like, you know, Bill de Blasio or you know, the different five boroughs. Each county has a different prosecutor and they're all elected and they're all woke. And nothing, except for Staten Island, I'll give them a pass. But that's the Georgetown of New York, so nothing really, yeah. The problem is nothing is really getting better in New York. And, you know, if you really want to get scared at this point, let me put this into perspective.
Besides looking in the mirror.
Yeah, that's a reliable disappointment for me every day. But, yeah, when you look at New York's 10-year surge in crime in the last year after the bail reform law was passed in Albany, and then look at Philadelphia, who has had no such law passed, and by order of our illustrious mayor and governor, everyone was supposed to be inside for the last year.
Yeah.
I have to make this clear for you. We had, the last 4 years running, more murders in Philadelphia than New York. Not per capita. We've had more murders than New York. New York is 8 times our population.
Do you think it's the drug trade in the Badlands? They're not getting the stuff to supply on the streets.
I think it's a cultural ethos. I think you're not letting cops be cops is your first problem. So there is no containment to a culture of criminality.
Okay.
There is not a lot of fatherhood. There's not a lot of social structure, and there is a terrible school district. So I'm not of the defunding of police. I am of the properly funding and managing of all these other social enterprises to include a county sheriff. You know, there are jurisdictions in the South where you live now. If you don't pay your child support, the Broward Sheriff's Office will come and arrest you.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't pay your child support here and no one seems to care. It's a completely civil manner. So, yeah, I mean, you have to at some point enforce fatherhood. If we're making people go out and get a fishing license, then how come they can have a kid and there's no paperwork involved? It comes down to, if you want to avoid the cycle of criminality that leads to organized crime, i.e. recruitment to a criminal organization that has your kid standing on a corner, either awaiting jail or getting killed, you have to first address what leads them there.
Yeah, and we were their fathers when we went out to the house.
Yes.
911, hey, can you take care of my kid? Is someone dying? No, he won't listen to me. Really? That's misuse of 911. But really, it speaks to the core problem of family. You don't have that fatherhood,
yes,
or that motherhood, whoever that person in charge of that family is, to make sure that kid isn't doing, or Johnny or Sally is not doing the wrong thing.
And here's the other thing. Today's, there is a very, you know, misaligned belief in criminal justice called the broken windows theory. I was taught the broken windows theory at John Jay in 1994 by Professor Flanagan, who was the legal bureau chief for the NYPD before he retired and went to college, you know, teach college.
Wow.
Broken windows is a long-held standard. Mm-hmm. And basically what it says, and you can't even argue with this, is today's petty thief, if left unchecked through a cycle of criminality, will become tomorrow's kingpin.
Exactly.
Because he's learned that crime pays. He's had zero deterrent. Right? So we have stepped away from broken windows policing as a country throughout, you know, the last, in the major cities at least, throughout the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And what that's done has led to a resurgence in crime we have not seen since the 90s, since the crack explosion, which is an interesting correlation because that was the last time all these same cities stepped away from broken windows theory.
Yep.
And if you look at political corruption, you look at organized crime, look at the 20-year cycle. I taught on this at Newman as well. De Blasio, 20 years before he was elected, was a deputy for Dinkins. Dinkins was the $2,400 a year guy.
Yeah.
Dinkins, 20 years before, was a deputy for Beam, who was the guy during the New York blackout when the city was getting burned for basically insurance arson.
Yep.
So there is a 20-year cycle of stupidity. It takes every 20 years, you know, we end up learning our lesson and going back. But I wish we could learn our lesson for good like some other countries do, because guess what happens? A lot of people die in that 20 years.
Yeah. And that's really the core of everything that we're talking about right now with organized crime and all the different issues. But how do we fix it? And so, you know, moving on to the next question, you alluded to, you know, the main hotbeds of organized crime, where they're located, and, you know, their capabilities of organized crime. Now, contrary to popular opinion, the mafia is still in operation and it's not losing any steam.
No, it's just shifting geographic locales.
Exactly. So Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York has an extensive history of mafia ties, and they remain as the central hub for their criminal activities. During your days as an officer in federal and municipal law enforcement, what tactical maneuvers were taken to expose these dealings and bring them to justice?
Well, in D.C., we worked in open city, so we really didn't see it. D.C. is an open city because D.C. was never a place. It's too transient.
Yeah.
So a lot of organized crime will latch into places that are entrenched with a certain political machine or a culture, union infrastructure that they could exploit that isn't going anywhere. And the problem with D.C. is every 4 to 8 years, you get a whole new group of people in there. And, you know, so D.C., Southern California, these are places that just, you know, Arizona, you just don't see the mob because it's just not in there. They would rather just run things transparently. Not D.C., of course, but, you know.
Right.
And you know, through that, there's really nowhere to latch your corruption onto and make money. You know, as a law enforcement officer, the key is, one, shuffling the deck. So in local law enforcement, if you want to avoid the corruption or the looking the other way that we saw in New York in the 70s that allowed organized crime to thrive, you can't leave a guy in the same assignment 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
You have to shuffle the deck. Not easy in a small town if you only have 30, 40 cops, but in, you know, a 1,000 plus level police department, you just can't do it. And I have friends on the Jersey side of the river here who work for small, you know, 100 member agencies, because in Jersey you have a new township every couple of miles. And when it comes to things like investigations and narcotics and things like that, they shuffle the decks. They'll borrow a guy from the prosecutors or exchange their detective with another township's to do those kinds of assignments so they don't burn their personnel. And it's very key because you need to keep people sharp to be looking for the things that are now part of the day-to-day.
Okay.
So shakedowns, bust outs, you know, those kind of no-show jobs, the things that really keep the mafia running.
Yeah.
If you look at the, you know, the big, they did a wiretapping documentary on Netflix recently, and that had a lot to do with the building trades in New York. Because they were latching in and they would get no-show jobs in all these major building contracts. Same in Atlantic City when the casinos were coming up. Well, okay, who's looking for that? Right now, there's no law enforcement agency designated to look for that. So if no one comes out and says, hey, I'm being shaken down, which a building tradesman won't do if he wants to keep his place from getting burnt down.
Right. We call that something lightning.
Yeah. Or, you know, they exactly. Or worse, with Local 401. So we had a situation here in Philly a few years ago where our ironworkers union was corrupt. And there was an, they used a RICO statute to indict the head of the union and all of his deputies.
Yeah.
And what they were doing was going into non-union job sites at night and, like, pulling a rebar.
Oh, wow.
Had that not been caught, that building would have collapsed and killed somebody. And this is the kind of callous criminal activity that we're seeing. In, you know, at the end of the day, it's about enriching you.
Yep. So, speaking of the history, in July of 2016, the FBI carried out a massive sweep leading to 40 alleged mobsters from reputed crime families being charged with forging an alliance known as the East Coast Enterprise. Some of their crimes include extortion, firearms trafficking, illegal gambling, healthcare fraud, arson, credit card skimming, and assault. Are we seeing the beginning of a rise in a new breed of organized crime amongst the mafia?
Absolutely not. What we're seeing is an awareness, or better yet, a media awareness. The reason, so if you go all the way back to Appalachia, I assume you've copied that in another episode. If not, we'll give you the 10-cent tour. But Appalachia was when Crazy Joe Gallo was hit. And in the 50s, basically, everyone sat down up as upstate New York.
Yes.
And had a meeting way away from the spotlight.
As depicted in The Godfather, right?
Yeah, it's similar. But they, yeah, I mean, there's several B-movies made about Appalachia at this point. The point is the reason that the families split up, and this is on the Italian side. The Russians are not as, it's basically the Russians work it like it's Russia or nobody else.
Right.
And the enterprises are, you know, not as divided. They more look at it as businesses, storefronts. There could be 10 storefronts in Brighton Beach alone. But they work amongst themselves. They don't talk outside their business. The Italians, what they did was they split up territory based on family. And that wasn't always large swaths. So if you look at Goodfellas, for example, Wise Guys, the book, those guys were out of East New York, right? But they ran Idlewild Airport, later became Kennedy Airport. They basically stole all the cargo they could get their hands on that was leaving Idlewild Airport. Idlewild's in Queens. So is this a Columbo or a Bonanno thing?
Right.
If they're in Brooklyn, where's the Gambinos come in? It's not as black and white as a territory as much as it's everyone working with everyone's strengths. They do business with each other. And they give each other tribute when they're in each other's worlds. And then there's lower ranking families, capo regimes, in places like New Jersey. New Jersey never reached the heights that New York did. So the DiCavalcanti family, which was the Sopranos, that's what they based the Sopranos TV show on. The DiCavalcanti family kicked into Queens.
Okay.
And the Bada Bing in real life was actually in Queen, on Queens Boulevard.
Okay.
So these guys, Tony's real life character, would drive all the way through Manhattan into Queens to sit down with these guys and then go back to Newark. So these are the things like you have to understand. And at the end of the day, you also have to understand something else. So whether it's running cigarettes from North Carolina, untaxed cigarettes, big money, especially in New York where it's $12 a pack.
Yeah.
You're looking at a place that doesn't have organized crime where different families are pooling together and sending someone down with a truck and buying as much crap as they can to bring up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Consider this. They're working together. And this has always been something that they did. Now they're catching on. The question I have is, what aren't they catching on to?
Right.
And the, you know, John Gotti made a lot of news and he was flashy and he had great suits and he was in the paper every day. And Giuliani made a lot of news because he was the guy prosecuting him and he ended up becoming mayor. All right. All well and good. The most powerful crime family in the United States was the Patriarca family, Providence, Rhode Island. Okay. Raymond L.S. Patriarca ran everything from Bridgeport, Connecticut to Montreal, Canada, including Boston, which was the biggest city only an hour away. He did it. He was an old man who sat in front of a coin-a-mat store on Atwell's Avenue in Federal Hill, Providence. He was low-key. And that's how he was able to be as strong as he was.
That's a great segue because, you know, the entertainment industry, they played a major role in romanticizing organized crime. And do you believe they helped perpetuate the criminal acts of organized crime?
I think they glorify it a little bit. It is a great genre. Goodfellas is still probably my favorite movie, if not Mean Streets. And it's funny how you see different levels of it. So The Godfather was basically the Don of all Dons. A huge house, you know, Tahoe, all that good stuff. And then you look at Goodfellas, which is basically a neighborhood crew of connected guys. No one was really made in Goodfellas. And then you look at Mean Streets, which was Scorsese's first movie in 74, if you haven't seen it. Go out and rent it. And Mean Streets was about a bunch of just punk kids in that type of environment, living and breathing in that type of environment, hoping maybe one day they'll be mobsters in the 70s. Either way, what it doesn't show is the downside. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm on the financial side of it, I can tell you there's a lot of people, you know, who weren't involved in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, if a small business got busted out because he went to one of these guys for a loan and couldn't afford it, right? Mm-hmm. He has employees. So when his business goes down, the employees are hungry.
Yeah.
This is a ripple effect that goes all the way through a city. And now even funnier is that some of this entrenched culture. So if organized crime, whether it be a mafia, you know, thank you media, or just plain old corruption. You know, a guy gets elected to run a union.
Yeah.
He gets drunk on power. Now he becomes a kingmaker. And everyone owes him a favor. And now he's the real head of the city. This is like John Dougherty, if you've read the indictment that's currently in court. John Dougherty runs Local 98, big electricians union here in Philly.
Yeah, I remember hearing that when I was here.
He's under two federal indictments for organized crime right now. The point is, there are a lot of electricians in the city who need work. Even worse, there's a lot of businesses that want to build. The more people like that influence what should be an otherwise corruption-free system, that includes things like pulling a permit for a building, or getting business use taxes because now they've elected all the councilmen to do their bidding. People are now voting with their feet. We're in a culture, it's 2021. And in 2021, you don't need to be physically down the street from your job site anymore.
Yeah.
You can have a computer. So if you're looking at Florida where you live, people are leaving New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, by the thousands, hundreds of thousands, and moving to places like Tennessee, Florida, Texas. Why? Because there's no champagne room in those states.
Right.
If I wanted to open a bar here, I basically have to glad hand the liquor authority and 10 other people to get it done, and then have a union job site unless I want five goons standing in front of my place with an inflatable rat.
Yeah.
Okay. In Florida, when you get your health license, there's literally a check form if you want to serve liquor, and they run that through the liquor.
Yep.
Why does it need to be a champagne room? Why do you know? I'm a New Yorker. You're from here, right?
Yep.
We both moved down here. Did you live in Maryland, Virginia?
I lived in Virginia.
I lived in Virginia too. One of the happiest moments of my life was in 1999, going with all my New York crap to the Virginia DMV in Alexandria. Expecting it to be an all-day affair because my entire life in New York, there's got to be five windows with five different lines because there's five different no-show jobs basically sitting there on their ass waiting to get paid. Virginia. In 20 minutes, I walked out with a new license, permanent. They printed it for me. New set of tags, nice. Address change, and a voter registration. 20 minutes. Why? Because they figured it out. Yeah. They didn't need a glad hand.
Yep.
And the places that are more organized crime entrenched, the more you see it. My cousin lives in Cranston, Rhode Island, and she told me if I ever move there, she has an in at the registry. Why do you need to know a guy at the DMV?
Exactly.
You shouldn't ever have to know a guy at the DMV.
It's funny you say that because it took me about an hour to do all that in Virginia. So, you know, Virginia DMV, we're giving you a shout out. We should get some funding.
Well, to be fair, I don't think it's like that anymore because this was all pre. This was.
Yeah.
The only time I ever voted for a Democrat was in Virginia to a guy who's now a senator. I don't want to give him a plug because he's turned out to be a hack. But, things ran good then. But I've heard, you know, through people who are still down there, Virginia has fallen off the grid very fast that pit.
I've been there recently. But, you know, moving into cybercrime and technology.
The new frontier.
Yep. Organized crime rises in power and strength, and it finds refuge in the partner in cybercrime. How have the two merged together to create a hydra of a force?
Very simply, the frauds that you used to have to bribe 5 or 6 people for in the old days, like you mentioned before, healthcare fraud. Healthcare fraud is big in organized crime, big, because at the end of the day, you're actually just chasing paper. Yeah. It has nothing to do, there's not an actual, patient involved. They're just forms being submitted in Medicare handing out money.
Yep.
Or insurance companies handing out money. Mm-hmm. And you used to need somebody in the doctor's office before, you needed someone in the insurance company before, you needed a fake patient before.
Yeah.
Well, if you know how to juke the systems and you have a good computer geek, mm-hmm. you could do all that through the web now. Absolutely. And that's a very, healthcare fraud is just a minute example of some of these scams. I mean, there are so many different scams you could run now from a desktop.
Yeah.
That you used to have to, run around on the street all day to pull in the old days. So, yeah, cyber is the new frontier. With one giant caveat, if you're watching, specifically you're doing an analysis of hiring in the security community right now, everyone's security director will get you a cyber guy right now online. The big problem with that is they're shifting all corporate resources to these cybersecurity directors who have, real problems thinking outside the box. It is that old joke. How do you know who the extroverted cybersecurity director is? Hmm. He's the one who looks at your shoelaces while he talks to you.
Oh, wow.
these are not street guys. Mm-hmm. So, when all those resources are being shifted, and this is coming from a business continuity professional, if you're shifting all of your asset protection resources to the computer because you're worried that all your forward-facing operations are going to the computer, you're leaving your physical assets wide open. And I could get into your building with a clipboard and a confident wave in 5 minutes and steal all the same stuff that cyber guy's stealing because I'm looting them off the top of copiers.
Yeah. So I would glean from that you think the cyber network is compromised. So what would you do to strengthen and curtail organized crime in that space?
First, understanding that it is not a governmental responsibility to protect one's own assets. I can't tell you how many really cheap or really unprepared corporate entities out there think that their networks will be somehow protected by some overarching government entity that just does not exist.
Yeah.
So you need to lock your stuff. And it's the same thing I tell people, at the American Board of Internal Medicine. I used to tell people all the time, I said, you live in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, in a city like this, leave your car unlocked or your front door unlocked when you went to sleep at night?
No, and I don't know where I would leave it too. That would be the second thing.
So why is it okay to walk into an office building and leave your purse sitting on a chair and leave your computer unlocked and leave your office door open all day?
Well, you and I both know you can't fix stupid and you can't teach common sense.
And that's the point. There is it's common misconceptions that it won't happen here. It's low hanging fruit. Cybercrime is low hanging fruit. It's not that it's trending upward. It's that it's out there. And if you leave something out there, it's going to get taken. As far as organized crime goes, it's the recognizing the open doorway, for the lack of it, but trying to make this very simple for the listener. And organized crime is going to tackle things that are worth their while. Mm-hmm. So if your profile is good, if you got your stuff together, they will target you. And just expect it. Just be ready for it. Have your stuff secure. Now, caveat, cybercrime doesn't need to be organized.
Right.
Could be a 14-year-old who knows how to hack.
Mm-hmm.
He could do you the same damage. It could also be nation state organized crime. So Capital One, Target, these are nation state attacks.
Yep.
What does it mean to you? Your credit card information is now compromised. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with who did it or how organized they were.
Yeah.
It has to do with you using the same password on five different platforms.
Yeah, I mean, you and I were both board members in InfraGuard, and so that's the critical infrastructure protection mechanism. But that's only so good. It gives you the information, but the end user, what do they do? Again, common sense can't fix stupid.
Right.
So, segue, COVID-19 has significantly changed the trajectory of how the operating and security mechanisms of governmental cyber networks function, and has opened the doors to an increased presence of organized crime. How is organized criminals utilizing the pandemic to accelerate their criminal activities?
Same way any criminal is using the pandemic. The pandemic is a terrible excuse. This is a sneak preview on my next piece that I'm writing now.
In the Hill, or where is that going to be?
I haven't been in the Hill in years. The Hill got too political. This will go abroad in Liberty.
Okay.
Here's the problem. I've seen COVID-19 as an excuse for the 500 murders in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it as an excuse if you're listening to Charlie LaDuff's NBN show in Detroit. Firefighters, who had take-home vehicles in the Detroit Fire Department were getting drunk and wrecking their vehicles at an astronomical rate. And they blame COVID in the press conference. Because it's a crutch.
Yeah.
Everyone could use this crutch. Oh, COVID-19 is caused. COVID-19 has been used as an excuse to the point where judges don't want to come to work. And they're not innovating. And that's our problem. When you use COVID-19 could have either been a great moment of innovation or a great moment of basic political punditry. We're going to punt this down the road or we're going to blame somebody else.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the political angle was what we saw. What I would have done, so let's say I'm now working for the First Judicial District,
mm-hmm.
or I'm working for the New York State Unified Court System, right? Or any of the equivalent Cook County court system.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is use COVID-19 to ask why, if Florida, for example, in large circuits like Orange County, Broward County, Miami-Dade County, Hillsborough, which is Tampa,
mm-hmm.
you don't actually need that perp to come into a courtroom to be arraigned. They have a room at the county jail with a two-way camera where he does everything he would do in that court. So you don't expose the corrections deputies that are bringing that guy in on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
You don't expose the judge. You don't expose the lawyers. Everyone's socially distanced
mm-hmm.
from this guy. And a cop is off the street 45 minutes because they have a sheriff and they have this basic 24-hour virtual processing. It's court by appointment.
Yep.
And then you have Philly, where a year goes by without a jury trial in a criminal case. And we wonder why there's 500 murders by people who are on release. Because at the same time, the bail reform nuts are going, well, we can't leave people in jail with COVID. Their excuse is COVID. You got to release everyone.
Okay.
The court's rule is COVID. Well, we can't have a trial.
The police use COVID because, well, we can't lock people up the rate we used to because we're just going to overcrowd the jails. At some point, we're just going to hit a log jam. And that's where we are right now. And that's why the country's seen the spike in violence we've seen. It's bad policy. How come, and this is a great example, you and me were cops in D.C. Make a felony arrest in D.C. What do we have? We have about 2 hours of paperwork, depending on what it is.
Yep.
Right? You can get your property cards, you got your DEA 7, you got your 163, your 251, your 252, your witness statements, all this crap to do one piddly little arrest.
Yep.
I was a power shift guy. So 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. I work.
Yeah.
I put two people on the book during my tour. Everyone on my team may put one or two people on the book.
And then you have to show up next morning.
7:30 the next morning. I've been off the shift 3 hours. I didn't even have enough time to drive back to Virginia, shit, shower, and shave, and come back into the district and pray I had some parking.
Yep.
Right?
And then they may put a boot on your patrol car.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the point I'm making is, at the same time, literally 1 mile away, literally across the Potomac in Virginia, Arlington County, Fairfax County, Alexandria, even Richmond, which is high crime.
Mm-hmm.
Cop makes the arrest in the street, takes him back to the station, searches him, writes a probable cause form, hands the prisoner's property, the prisoner, and the form over to the county sheriff, walks to the next room where a magistrate's sitting. The magistrate reads the report, prints out a warrant, says, "Do you swear and affirm?" "I do." Yeah. The magistrate right there makes the decision whether this perp is held or not for trial, which means there's no overcrowding in the jail because no one's sitting there for minor crap.
Yep.
And you're back in service to protect other people. And that's why Richmond could do the job that D.C. did. It's basically the same square mileage. But Richmond only had like 800 cops and D.C. had 3,500 cops because it's efficient. And that's the problem with COVID-19. COVID-19 is letting crime fester in places that refuse to innovate. Using the same rights and responsibilities that we have under the Constitution, you have to improvise, overcome, adapt, and innovate. You can't just sit here using the same garbage you're used to because everyone keeps a job.
Yeah. It's really about people, processes, and technology. That's one thing I learned in my days as ISO 27000 consultant with the Spectrum Group in Virginia. I still do that. If one cog in a wheel fails, the two are going to just not, it's going to come off the tracks.
Right.
So that is a segue to the next question. How can we modernize our cyber systems across the federal government so there's synergy and the local government?
Yeah, I don't use government cyber systems. So, I mean, I'm the wrong guy to ask that. But the key is user friendly. The reason I am not in the government anymore, it's because I'm in a position to innovate. I'm in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And if it makes sense, they'll buy it in the private sector. The public sector, you know, what you see, and I remember, 15 years ago when I was consulting and, HSPD-12 stuff, yeah. Right, for on DHS-funded programs for things like the city of Los Angeles, Columbus, Ohio, here. It was hilarious because the more complicated systems got, the more contracts there were, the more interoperability issues and middleware issues that would happen.
Yeah.
That's still a problem. Every time some new edict comes down from the government or some new threat is identified, they just add a layer. Mm-hmm. They don't figure out how to make the layers easier.
So kicking the can down the road.
No, they're making it worse. They're developing better mousetraps that are deemed to fail. The next time someone figures out how to get around the better mousetrap. And then it's another 9-digit fix for that better mousetrap to make it even more complicated.
Okay.
That's the problem why the governments are always going to be 10 feet behind the cyber criminals. Cyber criminals use a very simple means. And then you got another threat, which is the nation threat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are we, if we're always playing catch up with cybersecurity, going to fight the PLA, who have significant military resources developed to hacking and stealing intellectual property?
Yeah. I mean, ex-KGB spies now are the Russian hackers.
Yeah.
Because the Soviet Union's dismantled, so they need to make money. Well, that's what they do.
But that's a 27-year-ago thing you're talking about. Now it's just a matter of, okay. 10 years ago, everyone got Nigerian emails from a prince who was suddenly your family member. Of course, we're not stupid enough to fall for that, but old people, other people did fall for it. It was enough to be fruitful. Did anyone ever ask why they all came from Nigeria? I did. You know what I found out? Nigerian law doesn't enforce frauds outside the nation border.
Interesting.
So that's why. And that's what we're seeing with Russian cyber attacks. Russian cyber attacks are criminal attacks. They're throwing stuff at the wall. The stuff you're seeing on Facebook with the political, you know, destabilization, that's different. That's government acted. But a lot of things like Capital One, the Target breach, stuff that makes people money, it's just happening because the Putin regime is basically kind of, you know, going, hey, you're not defrauding Russians, so, you know, I'm not going to enforce it.
Well, he's got Snowden, so he's got the playbook. The
same thing with Chinese intellectual property theft. When I was at the American Board of Internal Medicine, I refused to offer our exams to anyone in a Chinese test center. If you were a Chinese national who could qualify for a medical board exam, you had to fly to Hong Kong, where we had Berne Agreement controls. We could get our intellectual property back. It's the same thing. Yeah. They allow it. They tacitly allow intellectual property theft. So, you know, that's the key is nation states who kind of, you know, like Nigeria with their frauds.
Yeah.
If they know that what they're doing, as long as they do it within certain parameters, is not going to be enforced in a certain country, why not set up shop there? And that's what we're seeing.
So the theme I'm gleaning from this is deterrence and putting policies and procedures that make sense and having people in the general public and in local government, state, federal, having the common sense and fortitude to make the right decision for themselves, the community, the United States as a whole. As new players emerge and the rules are being written, what avenues do you perceive organized crime taking in the future?
Any way the money is. Any way the money is. You're going to see it less and less on a street corner and more in the boardroom. I think there's still very, very significant opportunity for political corruption. I think organized crime is not stupid. They're backing a lot of plays that are based in things like nonprofit organizations. If you don't think a lot of these activist groups that are making a lot of noise right now aren't linked to organized crime or themselves organized crime, I would like you to read a law book because they are 100% organized crime.
All right.
And that's what we're seeing. If you know, certain organizations that have, you know, an identity aspect to them are basically shielded from prosecution because the politically elected prosecutors in various jurisdictions don't want to be the guy to indict them,
mm-hmm.
That's a gold mine to anyone committing crime in that name.
Well, this has definitely been enlightening. I appreciate you being on Injustice Anywhere is a Threat to Justice Everywhere. Tell the listeners, because you have some great information and knowledge and experience, where they can get a hold of you, contact you if they have any follow-up questions.
So, okay, if you're a company or a business or anyone who wants to protect their assets, go to Mannes & Associates, all one word. My name is spelled M-A-N-N-E-S, mannesandassociates.com. abmannes.com is my personal site where you get my writings and things like that. Or just follow me on Twitter at Public Safety SME, all one word. And, you know, I welcome you, you know, follow me. You could call me out, say I'm full of shit. You know, everyone's welcome to an opinion in this world. Whether it's valid or not, we'll have that discussion.
Well, again, Ben Mannes of Ben Mannes Associates, I really thank you for your time. It was a long time coming. Let's not make it another 3.5 years. We'll catch up.
Hey, don't move to Florida. What do you want from me?
Hey.
Or actually, move me to Florida. That's a better one.
But again, catching up with a fellow brethren of not only our lodge, but DC Police Department. And that's really what this is about, a band of brothers and sisters. But about you also in the broader community listening, you and you alone can make the right decision and advocate for those in power to make the correct policy and procedures to talk about things that we're talking about, but also do. Because you have a vote, you have a right. We should not be the victims of organized crime, but it starts with you, your family, and those you elect. So be an advocate, be a change agent. And until next time, thank you. Thank you for your time and privilege of your time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram at Brzezinczek Foundation Corp and on Twitter at Brzezinczek Found One. To see our efforts on social justice and criminal justice reform, check out our website at www.robertbrzezinczek.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.